call this meeting of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners to order. This is Wednesday, March 28th. It's 9:30 a.m. and we are in the Commissioners' Meeting Room in the County Courthouse. First item on our agenda is to establish a quorum. We have all three commissioners present. Next, we move to the adoption of the consent calendar. This is items of a routine nature or items that have come before the commissioners before. Is there any item you wish to highlight? Or I'll entertain a motion.
Excuse me, commissioners. Can we pull items 4, G, 2, and 3? Number 2, we had expected to have all the signatures for that particular document. We don't have those yet. And number 3 is actually not needed.
Okay, I'm sorry. So items G, 2, yeah. and 3?
G, 2, and 3, please.
Okay, so
the Brown Park Grant and Public Health Advisory Committee?
Yep.
Okay.
Will those be coming back or?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll remove those two items.
So, Mr. Chair, I would move for adoption of the consent calendar minus the two items mentioned by Council Belmont.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries. Next on our agenda, we have a decision item, which is the lease between the Curry Family Trust and Lincoln County for property at 1231A Southeast Bay Boulevard. And I know this will be discussed. I think it's worthy of noting. It's for veteran services.
So. Yes, yes. Commissioner, for some time we've been negotiating a lease, looking for an additional space for our Veteran Services office to create a Veteran Services Center. In part, this is due to the additional funding that the state has provided to us, actually voter-approved state funding, so we have additional funds and can have more services than we currently provide. And the space that we have allotted for this right now is insufficient to do really the vision they've got for making a true Veteran Services Center. But this allows us to move forward with that particular project now. This is located, for purposes of identification, it's located across the street from the extension building that the county purchased and built, remodeled not too long ago. And so it's actually the building that's right across the parking lot there. It's the second floor.
To clarify, you said across the street. It's actually across the parking
lot. It's on the same side of the street.
Of the street.
Yeah, there's dual buildings.
We don't want
there.
People walking across Bay Boulevard.
Well, they will actually.
But they will
for
at the parking lot.
For parking,
right.
Yes.
The supplemental parking lot.
Because we did acquire some additional property for parking. So this is part of what's really becoming now a kind of a government complex there. And this is the second floor of what's known as, still known as the Curry Building. And it's about 2,000 square feet. There's some work. One of the reasons we're doing a lease of this nature and of this length is to amortize the cost for some improvements that are being made for our needs in that particular space.
Including the installation of a chairlift for access.
That's actually
right.
ADA
lift. We named the extension service the Curry Building.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is in the building next to it. So which is the Curry Building?
They're both Curry buildings. One is that we purchased from the Currys and the county owns. The other is still owned by the Currys.
Okay.
Now, one could be Red Curry and the other Yellow Curry.
East Curry and West Curry.
There you go.
So, would you explain a little bit about what the Veterans Service Center can be there if everything goes as planned?
Yeah, I'm going to do this in a very cursory explanation because we really need Devin Whitaker here because he is the one who has the vision for what they want to
Our
do.
Our Veterans Service
plan.
Officer.
Veterans Services Officer. And I'm sorry I wasn't able to have him here today for this particular thing. But really, the kind of the expansion of services would really allow some outside consultants, including doctors and others, to come in who need to do examination or review of veterans who are applying for benefits. And what this will allow us to do is to, rather than kind of, we've really had to, you know, push people into the valley, go different places here to get some of the necessary services in order to make sure that our veterans qualify for the benefits that they are eligible for. And so this will allow the services to come to the veterans rather than the veterans having to go out to the services. That might be the best explanation. There's a whole panoply of things that will be done in this particular space. And again, I think we'll have Devin come back and do a presentation to you on what his vision is for this particular center.
Okay. That's as good as explanation as I know of, but I've talked to him a little bit. I guess my other question is there really hasn't been many of these built in communities our size, am I correct?
That's correct. This will be very unique for a community our size, and especially a rural community, to have the kind of the full menu of services that are available in one location. And it's a great location, by the way. It's an excellent space. I think it'll do justice to our veterans.
Mr. Chair, if I may. Commissioner Thompson often doesn't like to take credit for things he's initiated, but I would just like to publicly acknowledge the fact that he was the one who identified this place as a potential site for this activity and kind of set the whole ball rolling for this. And I think all veterans ought to be grateful for him for that, because this is going to be another big leap forward in what we're able to do for veterans. When I came into office back in 2005, I asked to become the liaison commissioner for veterans, even though I did not serve myself. I come from a military family and really watched growing up, seeing my father having to fight his whole life for the benefits that he had earned through the VA. So this has been something very personal to me, and knowing so many veterans in our community and the struggles that they have dealt with to, again, access the benefits that they've earned. You know, back in 2005, we had one county veteran service officer working 4 days a week. Now we've got two working full-time, as well as a front desk person, and now with the new state money, we're going to be able to hire, I believe, a third part-time person who will spend the majority of their time. I believe the plan is to in Lincoln City. We've already expanded our Lincoln City presence for veteran services from 1 day a month to 1 day a week, but this new position will allow further expansion there. But that person will also need a workspace in Newport, so in addition to the other things that Council Belmont mentioned, this new location will offer that as well. One other thing that I want to say is really good about this location that both Devin and his predecessor John Reed talked about, how veterans, they really need a space that they consider their own space, a safe space that doesn't have the feeling of a government office. And this is a beautiful spot, you know, surrounded by windows on all sides, the three sides looking out onto the bay. I think it is just going to be a wonderful spot for our veterans for years to come.
Okay. Any other comments? As I indicated in initial remarks, I think this is a tremendous step forward in service to our benefits. And Commissioner Hall, you did an excellent job of detailing that, so thank you.
Yeah, and it's been a fight through the years. In 2007, we got money from the legislature that allowed us to add the second position to the office, and then, as Commissioner Thompson noted, the people voted overwhelmingly. I think it was something like 83% to dedicate lottery money for additional veteran services. Unfortunately, the governor tried to back general fund money out of the last budget to so the expansion wouldn't have been nearly as big as it should have been, but basically two groups, the veterans organizations and Association of Counties, we dug in our heels and said, oh no you don't, and that wasn't a hard sell with the legislature, frankly, but again, advocacy helps make sure the will of the people is carried out.
Well, while we're giving recognition to what we have done, you acknowledge Commissioner Thompson's work. I'll acknowledge your work as president of the Association of Oregon Counties on behalf of the veterans. So good work to both of you. I'm working on other issues, I assure you, like housing for the maritime industry. Anyhow, I'll entertain a motion, I think, at this point.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we approve the proposed lease between the Curry Family Trust and Lincoln County for property located at 1231A Southeast Bay Boulevard in Newport for veteran services.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Commission. Motion carries.
Commissioners, at some point we'll have a grand opening of the new space when things get developed and we need them.
Just one more thing, if I could, Mr. Chair. I mean, as mentioned by Commissioner Thompson, how groundbreaking this is. Devin has told me he's going to see about the possibility we'll at least invite regional, and if we can get somebody to come from the VA in Washington, love to have them come, because he truly does think that this could become a model for other rural communities, to showing that if we can achieve this in a county, Lincoln County size, other communities can do it as well if they've got the leadership and the will.
Absolutely. Well, I'll mention a couple things. Devin's been back to Washington, D.C., actually, and met with the president, I believe, about the things that we've accomplished in getting a community this size to be able to have as many veterans they are receiving the benefits. It's become an economic driver, actually, asset to us in the community. Because we're getting people that a lot of communities don't get, that deserve those benefits, to be able to receive those benefits because of the Veterans Office. And that's the goal that should be for all communities. It's for their own benefit, but they haven't figured out. Maybe we can lead the way by showing what can be done.
Yeah, first and foremost, it's important, I think, to, you know, provide the benefits that these men and women have earned. But I think the legislature saw the economic case when Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs presented documentation. Oklahoma is a state with not much bigger veterans population than ours, but Oregon is getting roughly, you know, these are very round numbers, $1 billion a year in veterans benefits, and Oklahoma, which has had, even though our veterans service program is robust, theirs is more robust, and they're pulling in $1.5 billion in federal veterans benefits every single year. And I think some legislators really took notice again of the economic driver aspect of this as well.
Absolutely. All right. Let's move on. Next item is reports, and we have a public health triennial review and report, and I believe that's presented by some representatives of our Health and Human Services Department, public health departments. Welcome, ladies. Please introduce yourselves for the record.
So I'm Dana Drum. I'm the Strategic Partnerships Lead for the Oregon Health Authority Public Health Division and oversee all of our work with local public health authorities.
And good morning. I'm Nicole Fields, and currently I'm the Interim Public Health Director.
Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Tell us what we want to hear. No, I'll rephrase that. Tell us what we should hear.
I think they're one and the same, so that's good.
All right, that's good.
Yes. So I don't know if you want to, do you want to say anything to tee this up, or you just want me to?
Yeah, you can just.
Okay. So, so you do have a handout, and you would have received a bit of time ago a letter and a summary report as well that's a little bit more detailed. But we, I'm here just to present kind of the results of the triennial review. We do this every 3 years, and it's a way that we assure compliance with the various funding streams and Oregon statute and rule related to public health. So when I do this presentation, I like to just take a moment to talk a little bit about what your responsibilities are as the governing body of the local public health authority, because I know you have lots of things on your plate. And so there are a number of statutory responsibilities which you all have, including collaborating with your local public health administrator, Rebecca Austin, who you are very fortunate to have. She is very capable and competent and does great work. And then adopting and enforcing any ordinances or rules that would be related to administering the public health functions. So some of those things may, certainly there are state public health laws, but you also have, as you know, the responsibility and power to adopt any additional ordinances that might be particularly applicable to your community and ensuring health in the community. A great example is the tobacco-free property policy that you all have. I noticed the signs as I came in. reviewing and making recommendations on the local public health modernization plan. That plan is actually by law required from every local public health authority by 2023, so you have plenty of time. But some of the work has already begun around modernization. I'll talk a little bit about that. And then monitoring the progress of the local public health authority in meeting statewide and local public health goals. Some of the other pieces that are specific responsibilities for the local public health authority is that in a situation of a communicable disease outbreak or some sort of public health emergency, the authority has responsibility for issuing and seeking isolation and quarantine orders should that need to happen to keep the public safe. Receiving reports and investigating reportable communicable diseases, making sure that immunization records are reviewed. So we just, back in February, had School Exclusion Day where we review, the local public health authority does a secondary review of all school immunization records to make sure everybody has what it is that they need to have to protect the public's health and safety. And then licensing and inspecting restaurants, tourist accommodations, public pools, spas, those kinds of things. And then regulation of public water systems. So at the state, we regulate the large, the largest public water systems, but then there's another set that are somewhat smaller but have multiple connections for which you do the inspection for. You also adopted and updated adopted and conducted a public health modernization assessment, so really looking at the public health capabilities and programs within your local public health authority and kind of what are the capacities, what's the expertise, where are the strengths, where are the gaps, and that was completed several years ago, and I know that Rebecca has used that information to provide you with information and recommendations around investment in public health and priorities. And then, again, that plan, and then any other public health programs that are necessary for public health and safety. So, for example, I know that here in your community, you do the Parents as Teachers program. That's not every community does that, and that's something that fits a unique need in your community. And then, of course, ongoing coordination with the Coordinated Care Organization and Early Learning Hubs. So the triennial review really focuses on two main agreements. The first is the Intergovernmental Agreement for the Financing of Public Health Services. That's where most of the public health dollars come through from the Oregon Health Authority, and it's a mix of state and federal dollars. You also receive through a separate agreement some prevention funds. I expect that eventually those will get incorporated into this main intergovernmental agreement, but it just hasn't happened yet. And then we have the Intergovernmental Agreement for Environmental Health Services with you. That agreement's a little bit different, where the county collects sets and collects the fees, and then a portion of those are remitted to the state to help support the ongoing state training, technical assistance, and infrastructure as it relates to the licensing and inspection programs for food pool, lodging kinds of things. So this time around, we looked at 18 different program areas. They were reviewed mostly during December. That's when the on-site portion of the review occurred. And we really treat these reviews not so much as audits, but really as a partnership and an opportunity to address, identify strengths, and then identify any areas for improvement. And then we try to work collaboratively to address any of those areas for improvement. So it's not a typical audit, like if you've worked in health systems and JCO or someone comes in. We try to really have a different kind of feel to it, where it is more of a partnership.
And as a former banker, as an auditor comes and visits the bank.
Yes. And for us, because we are a system between local and state in particular, we find that this is the most effective way, and we have have the flexibility in order to do that. So we identified a number of strengths. I've already mentioned that you have a very experienced local public health administrator in Rebecca. She's brought a strong sense of quality improvement throughout the department. Some really excellent work that she started soon after she got here some years ago was beginning to really look at prevention and health promotion and how can there be more of an emphasis on that and more capacity. And so has done a lot of work to expand that department. I think when she got here, there was one person, and now there are
we have six plus myself. Yeah.
So that's significant. I mean, that's often the work that's hardest to fund in public health. We don't get a lot of state dollars for that work, and or a lot of federal dollars too. And so it's really critical work because it's the work that happens further upstream and will save you human and financial costs in the long run. So. There are a number of strong regional partnerships, particularly with Linn and Benton counties, and now with some of this new public health modernization funding, which I noticed was on your consent calendar, also adding Lane County to the mix of that. But a lot of work around HIV early intervention, nurse home visiting. There's been a tri-county collaboration around that, and the CCO, is my understanding, has been involved in that as well. And then work around prescription drug overdose prevention, which you've seen a lot in the news lately with the national attention, but regional work happening there. In some of the particular programs, across the board, we really found a lot of strong collaboration. So not only collaboration with other agencies, but in particular around the maternal and child health focus programs, also looking at ways to integrate the home visiting work and WIC, which provides supplemental nutrition for pregnant moms and children up to age 5. And I believe all of your home visitors are WIC certifiers as well.
Not all of them, but
a number of them. And so there's that integration of the work that happens so that there's easy access to needed services. And then in communicable disease, I mean, this really is kind of part of the backbone of public health. And in the last 3 years, just to give you an idea of the volume your staff deal with, there were 444 communicable disease reports. All of those have to have some sort of follow-up, and depending on the disease, that follow-up can be quite intense, and some may be less so, but all requiring follow-up. And then dealt with 24 different communicable disease outbreaks. So there's a lot of collaboration that also happens with the environmental health professionals within the health authority, the local health authority. But this is an important area of work, and your team is working hard. And if you look at that over a 3-year period, you average about 8 outbreaks a year. The amount of work involved there shouldn't be underestimated. Drinking water, I talked a little bit about this earlier, but you're responsible for 49 of those water systems that I mentioned. Another area of strength in your food.
Excuse me, if I may interrupt.
Yes, sir.
I'm assuming those aren't obviously the major city water systems.
These community are ones like.
But would that necessarily apply to my well, where I'm on a single well?
No, we do not. We do not regulate the individual wells. There's a specific definition that there's so many connections, okay. And that sort of gets it within the realm of
kind of a small community water system.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry. At the state level, we do the large municipality water systems. In food, pool, lodging, I know that you guys had some staffing vacancies in the earlier part of the 3-year triennial review period, but once you all were fully staffed, you're at 100% inspection completion rate. So even though you know, we knew there had that 100% or you weren't above 90% for part of the review look-back period because in the last 6 months you've been fully staffed and you're at 100%. There's no finding there because clearly when you have the capacity, you are able to get the work done. So that's great. And I think that's important just to note that's especially important work when a community, when tourism is an important part of your economy. You have a very engaged health officer in Dr. Long. He and Rebecca have a strong communication between them. He's very engaged, especially in issues of communicable disease and emergency preparedness, and provides some leadership there. And speaking of emergency preparedness, Lincoln County is one of the counties where you have actually integrated public health emergency preparedness with the Office of Emergency, with the County Emergency Management. And we find in some communities that's a model that works well, and there's a lot of collaboration that happens across all levels of government, but also within the community around that work, and some really intentional work happening in terms of strengthening the capabilities and training and those kinds of things in that particular area. In immunizations, lots of good community collaborations. And then there has been in recent years a focus on decreasing the kindergarten exemption rate. So parents can choose to exempt their kids from certain, you know, from immunizations. They have, there's a certain process they have to go through so that they are making an informed decision about that. But there has been some work by the local public health authority to try to close the gap some on that, and those efforts have started to show a steady decrease in the parents opting for those exemptions, which you know, increases the opportunity for herd immunity and greater protection in the community from things like measles and other communicable diseases. You guys have a very strong nurse family partnership program. It's a nationally recognized program. It's with national standards that have to be followed. The focus is on low-income women who are pregnant with their first child. Since July 2012, which is when the county started offering the program, you've served over 230 clients. But I think the next pieces are even more astounding and really deserve recognition. Even though the staffing level stayed the same in the last year, the number of client visits increased by almost a third. So more, you know, the people being served are receiving more of the services that they need. And then the National Nurse Family Partnership Program has a formula they use to figure out, like, how many families should a particular program be serving. Your community in the fiscal year of 2016 to 17, 82% of all county first births were served by this program. That's just blows my mind. That's amazing. And based on that formula that I was mentioning, the program here is serving twice the number of families that the national program would expect them to be serving. Yeah. You provide reproductive health services. There are 6 sites throughout the county that provides those services. Similarly, throughout the county, there are services provided related to sexually transmitted diseases. In 2015, you had an early syphilis outbreak in the community, and through the hard work of your staff and partnerships, that outbreak was able to be controlled, and a lot of strategic use of communication was used during that outbreak to get messages out. And that's an important piece of the public health work, is being able to get the right messages to the right places in the community. Similarly, with your tobacco work, you do a lot of work around our low-cost media to get prevention messages out, and have been effective at that. You've got lots of positive relationships with various organizations, and that enables the staff and your partners to leverage resources for greater impact. And then there's been a lot of effort around enhancing cessation screening, referrals, training, so that folks that are addicted to tobacco and want to quit, they have access to the resources they need to help do that. Vital records. So for the first 6 months after a birth or a death, the community members can go to the health department to get copies of their records. When those requests come in, things are processed within 1 day, which is great. When those kinds of vital events happen, people often need those documents in a very timely fashion, and you're providing that. WIC, I've already talked a little bit about this. Strong teamwork, great customer service, a cross-training model so that multiple people can do the various functions. So that clients can get the services that they need at the time that they need them. A new satellite clinic was opened in Waldport in 2017. You have a partnership with the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians so that the tribal members can conveniently get their WIC benefits. There's a unique partnership with Advantage Dental, so they come and provide fluoride varnishes and oral care consultations at WIC health fairs, which is another critical piece. And then in the summer, there's a Farm Direct Nutrition program. So part of WIC, you can get vouchers to or checks to go to the local farmers market and get fresh produce. And your redemption rate was slightly higher than the state average, and the program issues checks right on site at the farmers market. So again, increasing the convenience and access. So in terms of areas for improvement, there, with the Babies First targeted case management program, there was there were some issues related to Medicaid billing policies, and so there's some work happening around just making sure that clients that are part of the Parents as Teachers program remain under the Babies First program so that it qualifies for targeted case management reimbursement through Medicaid. In terms of fiscal, I think there were just some issues around getting accurate quarterly reports back to OHA so that we can submit you your, so we can pay you, basically.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but we've made some changes already to try to address some of these issues, have we not?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And then also, and this is, I will just mention, this is a common finding, I think, because it just sort of, it only happens every 2 years, and so I think sometimes it falls off the radar, but the need for an analysis around family planning and costs and using that to set the fees, so that's also a piece. But again, you know, something that can be easily resolved. For immunizations, something that you need to be cleaned up around ordering a vaccine, that's already been resolved. This next one is something that's fairly common as well that we find. We want moms or parents to be offered the first dose of hepatitis B when babies are born. We like that to happen before they leave the hospital, and so when that rate drops below 80%, we want the local public health authorities to be working with those the hospital and the community to get that back up. Usually it's a communication and training issue, and as I said, it's a somewhat common finding or area of improvement we find on reviews, I think, because it's a little bit outside of sort of the day-to-day work.
Well, and excuse me, but again, as I was listening, I'm thinking, well, clearly that's normally going to be an environment in a hospital, and of course we don't have any direct access or authority over the hospital, so having said that, I think we have a very good relationship right. with our hospitals in the county, but I think it's a situation where looks like we're complying, it looks like we're doing a good job, but there's could be some nuances there as to how that occurs.
Right. Often it may be that the hospital isn't tracking it, or there's been a change in staffing, and so usually it's a communication kind of piece that happens, and then it gets resolved. Mm-hmm. So it really is one of those key pieces around public health partnership and using that partnership to kind of help other entities we work with, just to be aware of some of those issues.
It really is, and it's kind of, you know, a check-in almost to make sure that we're in a proper partnership with the hospitals and that we're touching base with them and they're communicating with us and doing some education pieces with them and working together as planned.
Because what happens is if there's a positive case, then there's some case management that needs to happen as well, and then some follow-up for future pregnancies. And so this is in the public health then becomes responsible for that piece. And so it's making sure that the continuity of care piece is there. And then achieving vaccine accountability. So what this means is that you had in a particular quarter, maybe not all of your clinics could account for 95% or more of the vaccine. Maybe that some had expired or had to be wasted or, you know, something like that. And so we want to get that above 95%. And so usually that's corrected pretty quickly. And some of these due dates are later in the process because we know it takes time to do that. So
having said that, I'm a little concerned about the reproductive health one since that was 14 days ago.
Yes, and I will say we've had some we've had staff in and out of the office, and so do you know if those are resolved yet?
I think the policies are going to health council next week or in 2 weeks, and once those are signed
then
up,
it'll
go to the state. So they're written. They're just
They're in process. Yeah. And then, mainly this is just making sure your clinical protocols are up to date. And I'll just say, in terms of reproductive health, to only have these two issues is pretty amazing. It's a highly regulated federal program. I mean, incredibly regulated. I think the tool that gets used to review just this program is like 30 pages because there are all these federal requirements. And there are a number of protocols that have to be done, and so this is a matter of sort of just doing some updating, and then there needs to be kind of a protocol for specific medical emergencies. So if someone were to have a heart attack while they're receiving reproductive health services, what are the staff going to do? In my mind, it's not an issue that the staff don't know what they're going to do. It may just not be written down in the way that we would like it. I don't have concerns about.
Sounds like it's relatively easy to.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we will send you a letter once everything has been resolved so that you know that it's been closed out.
Has other letters.
Yeah. But then it closes everything out. I'm not going to go through the WIC items unless you have questions. WIC has to be reviewed by federal requirement every 2 years, so it doesn't always line up with the triennial review, and so we include the most recent WIC review for your information, but all of those items were resolved quite some time ago.
Yeah, and I'll say we hired a new coordinator just a little over a year ago, and this was one of her main goals, was to resolve all the findings from this review, and we're just really proud that she was able to accomplish that all within about a year and get up to staffing standards for the WIC program and even kind of go above and beyond in opening a new clinic. So we're really proud to get those kind of off the list.
So are there three clinics now in the county?
There are actually four. There's Sillette's, Lincoln City, Newport, and then the new one in Waltport.
Okay, I wasn't aware of Sillette's.
Yeah.
All right. Very good.
So with that, I'm going to stop there. I'm mindful of the time. I want to see if you have any other questions. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Yes, sir.
Commissioner Thompson. So I looked through the review, and I see here continuously going back to, I heard that page so that I was looking at, they worry about communicable diseases, hepatitis AAC and communicable disease, HIV. And if you look through it, it's mentioned here several times. And I had a comment by our new health director the other day in a budget meeting and said this is one of her biggest worries, that we'll get a outbreak of communicable diseases. So why does the state or the federal government not fund clean needle program, because that program is related to every one of these things and they're expecting the county to fund that in their budgets?
So what I'll say, so I think there are multiple levels to your question about safe needle exchange, is I think it's what you're getting at. Right. And so the federal government, I mean, those are congressional rules. There are a number of strings attached to all federal funding, and so that's one of those pieces. There's not a lot of state investment in communicable disease, period. There is not a lot of state investment in public health, period. So there just haven't been the state resources that could sort of counter the federal prohibition on using federal funds to support a program like that. And so that's part of the challenge. We are seeing, for communicable disease in general, the legislature did invest for this current biennium $5 million for public health modernization. Three quarters of those dollars are going out to local public health authorities and for emphasis on communicable disease. And so your regional partners, Lane, Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln all got together, and I don't believe that this rose as a particular priority, but there is broader work happening using those dollars to build more capacity to address communicable disease in the region.
So you kind of danced around it kind of nice, like a political person would. And I'll go back to my question again.
It's Commissioner Thompson, do you mind if I take it on? Because no. I think Anna, maybe as a state employee, wants to be.
Let me go out a little bit.
It's all right. I can be in the hot seat.
I'm still. We're dealing with it because right now in our own budget, and I'm wondering because
simple answer.
I'll go back to it. Is, you know, we've got these diseases that are running around out there that can be led back to. Usually, or sometimes, started with inappropriate needle use of various drugs that use needles. And it seems like to me that everybody's dancing around this issue instead of trying to answer it directly, when it is sometimes the thing that can create this. Am I right in my assessment? I mean, oh, I guess that's the way to ask the question.
So there are a variety of communicable diseases, and there are a variety of ways that they get transmitted.
Right.
Depending on the disease, certainly using dirty needles is a way that some communicable diseases can be transmitted. But it's a funding issue. There's not funding for it right now.
A few years ago, I don't think the problem of some of these drugs being used is as high as it is today, if I see with law enforcement and what people are telling me. I'm wondering if our health program may not be keeping up with the changes in our society. So that's my statement.
Thank you.
Commissioner, you're welcome to answer. Sure. Well, I think there's a very simple and very direct answer, Commissioner Thompson, to your question why Congress hasn't funded this yet, because they haven't had the political will or the guts. As we discussed at the budget meeting yesterday, some people are hostile to needle exchange programs because they see it as government enabling drug use. But when you weigh that against the potential costs, you know, we heard in Siletz until we got the sheriff's presence there, and the number of needles that were being found in parks all around the town, discarded needles was huge. We heard in our budget meeting yesterday that Newport City Water Treatment Plant has been contacting our public health people regularly to deal with an increasing number of needles that are showing up at the water treatment plant because people are flushing their needles. We heard there was a county in Indiana, Rebecca, is 150 the number? About our size.
Yeah,
150 people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a county about our size, because a small circle of people were sharing needles for IV drug use. They had an outbreak of 150 AIDS cases. And if, you know, anybody cannot imagine the staggering human cost as well as medical cost to the community, a community like ours, to deal with 150 AIDS cases, it's a case where you have to weigh the cost-benefit ratio, and Congress should be stepping up and funding this nationally, but as a result, they aren't, so local communities are having to find the means to do it.
Mm-hmm. And I want to also just point out that while safe needle exchange is a very important, it is a public health intervention, it doesn't get further upstream at the issues of sort of how folks get there. And one of the things that the state, through federal funds, but a strong initiative, you know, kind of following also, really Oregon was a leader around this, and the feds are following, is really around opioids, and that folks get addicted to opioids, and then, you know, when they can't access, they can no longer access through prescription, and then they have to seek other means to access drugs, and then it moves more, can move more into IV drug use. And so sure. I think also, you know, you have to look at it comprehensively, sure. And while that's one piece, you know, and there are a variety of other pieces as well that are needed to address that particular problem.
Yeah, and I will say, too, that we just recently received an HIV early intervention grant, and we'll be, or have hired an outreach worker to go out and do rapid testing in the field. So she'll be kind of out in the community doing some more HIV testing. This would be a program that we would love to partner with her services to be able to offer needle exchange. It's not something we can fund through that grant. However, that's kind of a common frustration for us in health promotion, even with some of the opioid grants not being able to fund naloxone. But it's a higher federal level issue, and we just kind of have to keep lobbying and keep having our voices heard that while we absolutely want to work upstream, there are concerns right now. I mean, we're clogging the pump stations with needles because people are flushing them, people are throwing them down the sewers, people are the library. I talked to the library security person the other day, and he was kind of picking up needles out from that little park behind the library. And it's a huge problem in our community, and we need to figure out something for it, because we can do what we can upstream, but we also have to address what's happening right now in our community. And also with doing rapid HIV testing in the field, there's a high chance we'll find more positives because people aren't getting tested, and now if we're out there testing them, something that's likely going to happen, and we have to prepare ourselves to be ready to educate people with what we have right now and kind of set ourselves up in the future to be able to look for more resources.
Well, I think I can safely say that Director Austin made a strong case for the needle exchange at our management meeting yesterday, where we discussed budget priorities. So I think there's certainly a recognition of the value of that program, and we'll see how it evolves through the budget process.
Mr. Chair, if yes. I could just say overall, I think this is an outstanding report. Any agency, business, organization should be exceptionally proud to be commended on so many things. And then just think what we could do if Oregon wasn't, 49th out of the 50 states in public health funding. But I think amazing things are being accomplished with limited resources. And hopefully folks in Salem and Washington are going to take notice of programs like ours and see the long-range benefits.
That's the last comment I would make. I think it speaks highly of Director Austin and the changes and the improvement that she's brought to public health. And frankly, as in her position as an interim director for the department, we're seeing a continuation of that progress. And the last thing I'd say is certainly, again, great strengths when you look at the areas of improvements, the fact that many of them are already addressed, are being addressed. And again, when you look at the specifics of some of those findings, it puts things in perspective, and I think we should commend the Public Health Department for the good work they're doing.
Absolutely.
Yes, we should.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Anything else, ladies?
Here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Next item on our agenda would be commissioner reports. Commissioner Hall.
Mr. Chair, if I may, since our last meeting, I participated in a conference call with Commissioner Joplin from Hood River County, Senator Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, and about 10 other people. During my term as AOC president last year, I pushed stepping up at the state level, got several more counties on board with it, engaged the interest of Senator Steiner Hayward, and what this was discussion trying to move forward at the state level with a mental health justice reinvestment concept that would be modeled on the justice reinvestment concept that, for instance, here in Lincoln County has funded the TAPS housing for the transitional housing for people exiting jail and prison. But this would be specific dollars targeted to the kind of mental health interventions that we know help keep people out of jail, get them into treatment, and they're talking about, you know, in an ideal world, funding it statewide, but if that's not possible, rolling it out with a pilot program in 5 or 6 counties, and I've got to think that the high degree of collaboration and momentum we've got in Lincoln County would position us well if there are resources, even under a pilot program, to be at or near the head of the line for that. So very encouraging momentum.
Very good. I'll just briefly state that I attended the Area Commission on Transportation meeting last Thursday, and we're working with Dr. Ogden at the hospitals. She's the director of both in our county, and there's some signing issues, and we're working with ODOT to try to get those hospitals more clearly identified along Highway 101. So with that, if there are no more commissioner reports, next we'll move to constituent input, opportunity for anyone to address the board on an issue of their choice, up to 5 minutes. Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record, although we know you, David.
Hi, Dave Peltier, Waldport. I wanted to thank all of you, your board and staff, for your support of veterans in our community. Excellent work. In the Lincoln City Warming Shelter, we have a possible 8% of veterans, and that figure varies a lot. Number of disparate items. I wanted to publicly thank Lieutenant Brian Cameron of the Lincoln County Sheriff's Department for driving by on Bay Street here in Newport, a possible suspect in several thefts up my road. He did a good job. I asked help of the Newport Police Department. I didn't get the help from them nor the Oregon State Patrol. What was the status of the $41,000 in marijuana money when I requested you to give some money to nonprofits? Been any change in that status?
Well, as I understand it, we're in a budget process. Commissioner Thompson came up with the idea of seeking support from cities so that we would be able to add to the money and, in effect, provide more stable funding. I think there, at least from my standpoint, there's a feeling that we need to take that money, provide education and prevention and information, but we're working with the cities to get more money and develop a program and be as effective as we can.
So I did not ask for $10,000 to go to Tracy Flowers' operation at 437 Northeast 1st Street here in Newport. She has a day program, a resource program. And also the Lincoln City Warming Shelter day program run by Amanda Cherry Holmes, who presented in front of you a couple weeks ago. Two little boys lost their mother in Florence. She died of cardiac arrest. And Amanda has taken on these two boys as part of her family, so her financial needs have changed. And so I'm requesting $10,000 to go to that 501c3 nonprofit, the Lincoln City Warming Shelter. Patrick Alexander, the very capable board president, is the editor-publisher of the Oregon Coast Today publication. And I had an idea. I think Terry Thompson had a very good concept that we need funding for NITO exchange. Perhaps we can augment that and put that into some of the homeless facilities in our communities to try to reach out to the homeless, who some of which use needles. logging in Lincoln County. I made my living for 30 years building houses, so I made my living off of wood, in essence. I'm not opposed to logging in our community, but I'd like to see the notification protocols changed and augmented so that we can have better communication in residential neighborhoods of logging operations. The negative effects on Legion Road are huge. As you know, I crashed February 14th on the road, and I hurt my hand. I've spent 44 days without being able to work at this point. The Stutzer Engineering out of Dallas, Oregon, does the work in making a road more amenable to heavy log trucks. Instead of having deputy sheriffs issue 24-hour stickers warning that equipment will be towed away, we need to have some easier, nicer protocol. A lot of rocks were put on our road with sharp edges, which are hurting our neighborhood. The county needs to put what's called 1/4-inch minus rock down rather than rocks with sharp edges. That'd be a good thing. We had a log truck almost hit an elder in my community. She ran firefighting crews for many years, and she was almost hit by a log truck going downhill towards Highway 101, going at a rapid rate of speed. So the log trucks have to slow down through residential neighborhoods. We need to have a sit-down meeting at some time to discuss all the problems that took place up Legion Road, my road, so that we can prevent these problems from happening. Not to stop logging. I mean, people have a right to log their properties.
I just. Your 5 minutes, David.
Okay. So I'm requesting money to go to Tracy Flowers' operation for the Resource Center and the Lincoln City Warming Shelter to assist Amanda Cherry Holmes in her role as a director of this nonprofit. The Seashore Family Literacy Program feeds hungry children in South Lincoln County and the Old Walport Middle School. Very important entity for South Lincoln County, and as you know, we need to bring more human services to South Lincoln County.
We need to bring more human services throughout the county.
Absolutely right. So again, my idea of having a house, a facility in Lincoln County someday, that we could do grant writing, we could research how to write grants, we can have training sessions there so we don't have to beg for money from the commissioners or the Ford Family Foundation or the Celeste Nation, that we can have professional grant writers write grants for human services in our communities. That would help our people. That would help move our county along in a good way. And if we can get a donated house in our community, we can. I know that's difficult, and I know the housing issue is terrible. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I will say that the nonprofit social allocation grant applications will be accepted, I believe, starting in April. And certainly opportunities there for nonprofit social service agencies to apply for grants, as you indicated, to fill needs. So okay. Make you aware of that. Any other constituent input? All right, the next meeting of the Board of Commissioners will be on Wednesday, April 4th, and we'll be here in the Board of Commissioners room at 9:30 a.m.
Chair Hunt, we do have an executive session today. That's small.
Excuse me. Let's back up. We do have an executive session. Will we be
coming out of that.
Reconvening?
No.
Okay. So we will be adjourning, recessing into executive session pursuant to ORS 192.660 (2) (D) to discuss labor negotiations, and we will not be reconvening in public. And then our next meeting of the Board of Commissioners will be on Wednesday, April 4th, 9:30 in this office. So until then, we're in recess.